Anya and the Sultan sat in the shade of the small white structure. They sipped lemonade that was served by a tall, silent servant in a khaki tunic and blue turban. Wira seemed at ease, sitting back with one long leg crossed over the other. He had a way about him that suggested he could snap into action from full relaxation like a cat. Anya knew about that. It described her pretty well, too.
You have a lot of staff who don't look ethnically Malay, if you don't mind my saying so.
We're pretty much a melting pot. The Pacific Rim's always been like that, you know. My father and my grandfather before him took in a great many ethnic Indian refugees, Hindu and Muslim alike, fleeing persecution. What would today be called ethnic cleansing in the sub-Saharan African states, following the collapse of colonialism? The last wave of it, anyway. My mother was Indian, a Rajput, and a Hindu.
You have a reputation as being very liberal, politically and religiously.
I like to think of myself as liberal in the classical sense. The modern usage seems to have acquired a lot of excess baggage. Of course, that fits up pretty strangely with being a despot, no matter how hard I try to be an enlightened one. Those are the circumstances in which I find myself, however.
I told your men on the Ozymandias that they, and now you, don't match up with the picture the Knights of the Risen Savior paint of you.
You should be careful of them, Miss Creed. They are dangerous men. Zealots, fanatics who long to bring back the days of the Crusades and help the gentle Issa, a holy man to Muslims as to Christians, to judge the world in fire.
Well, now, Your Excellency, that's the thing. They don't match your image of them any more than you match their image of you.
With all respect, people's true motivations can be hidden by a winning nature and a smile. As my own might well be, of course. At least I try for a winning nature. Being confrontational causes more friction than it's worth, I find. Especially when the nation one rules is the size, if not of a stamp, of only a large postcard. Fortunately, I've studied a book on that very subject by a most wise man.
Jalaluddin Rumi?
Dale Carnegie. How to win friends and influence people?
It works. Although sometimes I admit I have trouble behaving myself.
Wira emptied his glass, set it down, and gazed at Anya for a moment. She tried hard not to think about other possible meanings of his words. She found herself more than a little drawn to him.
I have set scholars to researching the relic's history. They come up with a great deal more speculation than solid information. There are persistent stories of some kind of relic being found in Jerusalem during the Sixth Crusade, long after the alleged true cross was discovered. It has been alleged to be a coffin containing the remains of a very holy man.
That squares with what the knights told me. Also, I can confirm that the object in the crate appears to be a coffin.
You can?
I got a glimpse of it on the island of Larev, after your people took it away from the knights and stashed it in a warehouse, waiting for the Ozymandias, I suppose.
You're very resourceful, Miss Creed. As well as most determined.
Thank you.
I myself am skeptical. At least in terms of any sort of power belonging to such an object. Although the Sufis assure me it might contain great baraka, which might be translated as blessings. I do believe the coffin possesses, at the least, enormous symbolic significance. Enough to incite all manner of passions in the wrong hands. That's why I am determined to keep it from both our domestic extremists and present-day crusaders.
I'm certainly behind you on that. Although I have to admit, I don't agree with you that the knights are crusader wannabes. Their own founder, the Emperor Frederick II, had to be excommunicated to get him even to go on the crusade. But that's not my main motivation.
You do seem highly motivated. You followed the coffin halfway around the world. Are you sure you don't believe it has miraculous powers yourself?
I'm sure that I don't. My interest is to see the relic, which, regardless of its specific nature, is an artifact of incalculable value to the world, properly conserved and entrusted into the proper hands.
And whose hands might they be?
That's the question, isn't it? I'll give you my stock answer. I don't know. I need more evidence to decide.
Will you help us recover the relic, then? I'm willing to have the matter adjudicated. In fact, I'm willing for you to participate in the process. I'd like that. You seem to be impartially interested. You can call upon whatever experts and authorities you desire. I will pay for the procedure.
Well, since you put it that way, one thing you must understand. I will not under any circumstances turn the artifact over to anyone I believe will use it for destructive ends.
That seems fair enough, if one accepts the premise that this object actually has that kind of power. But I guess it's not too far-fetched that it might cause social upheaval by overturning long-cherished beliefs.
Given all the blood spilled over it in just the last few days, there's no denying its power to cause mayhem. What's your interest in the artifact?
I'm fascinated by history, and both personally and, as you might say, professionally interested in the question of reconciling people of different faiths. I decided to involve my people when I discovered that it had been stolen from the knights who had held it for centuries, and that in some way the Sword of the Faith, the Islamist terrorist movement that afflicts this country, had gotten involved. My intelligence indicates it was from those terrorists that the knights recovered the artifact in mid-ocean.
How did they get involved in all this?
I've no idea. My security advisors suggest they may want it to serve as a rallying point for a violent jihad.
Against you?
I would be the first, Anya.
I see your point. But how about the allegation that you want to use the relic to further your own expansionist aims?
Only because our near neighbors, the Malaysian Federation, so quickly recognized our succession, leading to other nations of the world following suit, have we been able to resist being forcibly rejoined to Indonesia. It's an open question whether the pool of oil recently found underneath us will provide sufficient means to prevent its being taken away from us by violence. If I am deranged enough to dream of conquest, won't that be a self-correcting problem? Inasmuch as it will ensure I'm overthrown and killed, either by outsiders or my own people.
Good point. Still, you could have powerful friends.
Representatives of various world powers have flocked to Meriapuri, proffering just such friendship. Are they less to be feared than my declared enemies? I wonder.
To Anya's surprise, after the afternoon chat in the gazebo, the Sultan had told her she was free to go. He requested she return the next day to begin helping with the recovery of the artifact from the South China Sea pirates. They agreed that was a priority. He told her a room had been reserved for her at the Hilton in Meriapuri. She was to be the guest of the Sultanate. Indeed, as of now, she was an official consultant to his government. Contracts were being drawn up. Once Anya checked into her hotel, she found Wira hadn't been entirely candid with her. Her luggage was already in her room when an official Sultanate car dropped her off. Room, in fact, wasn't the right word. It was a penthouse suite with a glorious view of the crescent-shaped natural harbor and city of Meriapuri. The contracts were slipped under her door while she soothed herself in a long bubble bath in the swimming pool-sized tub, complete with water jets and gilded fixtures. All that was needed was a handsome, well-muscled male attendant. Or even two. Except she was afraid to say anything about it within hearing of the hotel staff, even in jest. She'd be totally mortified if they actually showed up. The contracts were lucrative. She might not have to take a commission from Rue after all. So far, she'd gone into this on a flyer, and her special accounts had taken a pretty large hit. Island hopping in the Pacific, especially on the shortest possible notice, wasn't a cheap proposition. But if this deal came across, she was going to see a hefty increase in her balances. Provided she survived, of course. The Sultan's palace walls were gleaming white stone, 15 feet high and topped with black wrought iron spear points. They served essentially the same purpose as knife wire, but made the place look less like a penitentiary. The guards were trim little Malays in crisp khaki uniforms with royal blue turbans that were more head-wrapping than what Sikhs wore. They carried wavy-bladed Kris daggers through their web belts and SAR-21 machine carbines slung over their shoulders. They looked more spit-and-polished than the commandos she had met on the Ozymandias, but Anya suspected they would fight capably enough, if necessary, to protect their sultan. She hoped it wouldn't be. She found she quite liked young Wira. He was remarkably handsome and charismatic. Maybe too much so for her peace of mind. Developing a crush on a head of state was not a good move. As friendly as he was, she was, after all, a foreign woman of no great status. The gate guards did not halt her or inspect ID. Instead, they snapped to attention as the tall, wrought iron gates rolled open. Anya drove through with a big smile and cheerful wave for both guards. It seemed the polite thing to do. She didn't want to try returning their salutes. She might seem to be mocking them. She wasn't hugely impressed with military ritual, but she did respect people doing their jobs. Approaching the palace, Anya noticed weird cement protrusions to either side of the road. They were overgrown with vines and had planters atop them. But each also had a funny little metal disc in the face pointed toward the road. She guessed they were self-forging projectile launchers. Those little 5-inch copper plates could turn in a microsecond or two into a sort of spearhead at the tip of a jet of incandescent gas, courtesy of a shaped explosive charge. They could punch through a light-armored vehicle like a blowtorch through butter, even kill a main battle tank from the right aspect. Sultanate security, clearly, believed in taking no chances. It was understandable, given that Sultan Rahim, Wira's father, had been assassinated 10 years earlier. Anya had done some research online the night before. She was pretty sure the hotel wireless net monitored her internet activity, whether or not the hotel actually knew about it. It hadn't slowed her much. She figured Wira, bright boy that he was, expected her to do her homework, especially for what he was paying her. There was one little thing she hadn't done, not yet, nor had she made up her mind how to play it. The car bumped over odd insets in the drive just before the road curved under the gleaming white portico of the palace entrance. Pop-up cement barriers, blast shields,